The TNT Shop has great gift ideas for your furry family member at tntradio.live. This is Jesse Zurawell and Perspective on today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
Welcome to Perspective. I'm Jesse Zurawell, your host for the hour. It is Thursday, and that means one thing guest-wise here at Perspective, and that is, of course, that Debbie Evans is joining me. Debbie is a retired NHS nurse, a former advisor to the UK's Department of Health, and she is now nursing correspondent for UK Column News. Debbie, how are you?
Jesse, I'm good, thank you. I hope all is well your side of the pond, and still this side, I mean, it's just as disunited as ever. And the big news is in the UK is that the NHS no longer exists. It's been completely dismantled, as are pretty much everybody's jobs being dismantled, in my opinion, deliberately. We've got road closures going on. It's like we're being zoned off. It's like we're not being allowed to travel. We've got strikes, as I'm sure you know all about over there. We've got doctors that are recommending patients get into Ubers and taxis to get to hospitals because the ambulances are going on strike, which of course means that nobody will be discharged from hospital because that's a bottleneck. There's talk about a vaccine minister, which is really reassuring to know. The cost of living is surging. The under 50s have just been told they need a fourth booster. And all of a sudden, we've got an mRNA coming through the pipeline for rabies. And I've been looking at the whole gaslighting sort of arena. And it's been a very interesting, and I've concocted a new language as well, Jesse, just for everybody as well, because I think we're living in times of Babel. And we need to turn the language around so that, you know, we don't say lockdown anymore. We say lock up. We don't say novel anymore. We say new. We don't say public information anymore. We say propaganda. You know, let's change the language back. So it's been a busy old week, as you can tell.
Yes, indeed. And I fully agree with you with regard to language. And I wouldn't call it changing the language so much as using language properly, doing away with these euphemisms and words designed to obscure or chosen because they obscure. We should be clear in what we're talking about as we speak out and fight against so much that is going on. So in that vein,
yeah, you're right.
Instead of new for novel, I would propose invented.
Yes. And life sciences, I've decided, is experiments on live subjects. That's what life sciences actually means in real terms. And vaccine is a gene platform. So we've got to get used to new words coming into our vocabulary, as well as replacing the words that they've so conveniently changed with words that we are all familiar with. So this whole genomic industry is huge. So we're not looking at vaccines anymore. We're looking at gene platforms. We're not looking at informed consent anymore. We're looking at implied consent. The language we need to speak up. And you know, I look at this whole thing and gaslighting, you know, it sounds such an innocuous term, doesn't it? Or you've been gaslit. But actually, when you look at the definition, and according to Merriam-Webster, it's up, I think it's 1,740%, the most searched word of the year. And it's a very yes. sinister word. And people kind of flip. It's not a big deal. But actually, it's a huge deal, and this is professional, deadly, intentional gaslighting, globalist gaslighting, if you like. So I think we just need to call things what they are and call it out for what they are. And, you know, with regards to yourself and the others that have been, so many others that have been vaccine injured, You know, so many that I speak to are being told that, you know, they're mad. No, it can't possibly be the vaccine. Don't be silly. It's your imagination. They're being fobbed off. They're being told that they're having anxiety attacks or panic attacks or depression. They're being gaslit. We've all been gaslit. And it's time that we started to gaslight our politicians and the scientists. You know, we need to demand answers from them. So I think we need to just reverse psychology a little bit. What do you think?
I agree. And I wouldn't call it gaslighting on our part. I would call it speaking truthfully. The only thing I would disagree on is asking our politicians and so-called scientists, the mainstream scientists, if you want to call them that, asking them to be truthful, to be accountable for their actions, because I don't think they're ever going to do that. And I don't think we can expect or should expect the corporate media to cover excess death honestly. Their job is not to do that. Their job is to gaslight us, as they've been doing. So they'll look at excess death within acceptable parameters. So in this case, the lockdown effects on excess death, or lockup effects, I should say, on excess death, but they won't dare tread into injection territory with regard to excess deaths. And I don't think we should be surprised by that or expect them to do that. We should call it out, certainly, but to expect them to care about humanity, and this goes for corporate media, this goes for politicians, this goes for the scientists and doctors who've perpetuated and perpetrated the COVID-19 narrative. We shouldn't expect forthrightness or contrition or admission from them in any way. And I think that if we hold our breath for that, we're eventually going to pass out, because they're never going to come around.
No, I think you're absolutely right. And, you know, I stand corrected, because I don't want to gaslight anybody, because the definition of gaslighting is psychological manipulation, where someone is targeting someone and making them question their own memory, their own perception, and their own judgment. I wouldn't ever want to do that. I'd ask probably some of these globalists, how would they feel? How would they feel if they were being gaslit? You know, because gaslighting is a big business. If you just put into a search bar the World Bank and gaslighting, you know, you come up with plenty of stuff on gaslighting. So this is a big business, and this is obviously a deliberate destruction of the human psyche, trying to make us all think we're going mad or be perceived as being insane. And I, for one, am not buying into it, but I can see that there's a huge mental health agenda on the cards. And the UK has just announced that it's going to use a vaccine task force approach for different areas of health. One of them's cancer, one's obesity, one's addiction. And, you know, you can see, and mental health is the fourth one. So you can see where they're targeting. They're deliberately destroying the human psyche, as well as the immune system, as well as life, as well as creation and humanity. They're destroying our psyche, this one big psyop. And I would draw your listeners' attention, actually, to the film Gaslight, which was Ingrid Bergman originally, but it's a fascinating film. And that's where the term gaslighting comes from. You know, it's this psychological thriller of this poor young woman who's made to think that she's going mad. And I know people who are saying to me, you know, things are moving, or, in their homes, people are moving stuff and people are making you believe that you've done something that you haven't. You know, I've lost my keys. No, I haven't. I've put them somewhere. People making you think that you've done something that you haven't. Gaslighting's a big business. And I think we all need to be aware of it in order to reverse it, because where we're trying to sow seeds of truth, they're trying to shed seeds of doubt. And it's the doubt that creates the fear. And it's the fear that's the only virus, in my opinion.
Yes, I absolutely agree with that. And what we've experienced over the last 3 years has been an attack both on our physical selves and our psychological selves, as you just pointed out. And the two are intimately linked. One of the biggest destroyers of our immune systems, if not the biggest one, is stress. And what induces stress more than fear? So it's no coincidence that we've been terrorized by gaslighting over the last 3 years, while also being told that there's a contagion on the loose. And even if you don't have symptoms, you could be carrying it and you could be spreading it. And this brings us, coincidentally or not, back to the HIV AIDS so-called pandemic. And today, December 1st, is World AIDS Day, which began the celebration of which, although celebration is probably not the right word, even though if you look up World AIDS Day, the Wikipedia entry characterizes it as a celebration. The celebration of this day and World AIDS Day, it brings to mind so much of what we've seen over the last 3 years with regard to anybody can be a vector of a virus, a vector of disease. And when you look into the history of AIDS and how it was developed, invented, both HIV and AIDS were invented, never isolated, never proven to exist based on Koch's postulates, how Fauci was intimately involved in the so-called HIV AIDS pandemic and pushed AZT, a repurposed chemotherapy drug that was so toxic before HIV AIDS, it had to be shelved. It was then pulled off the shelf and given to AIDS patients, killed about 300,000 gay men here in the US. It's the same. What we've seen over the last 3 years is what we saw play out in the 80s and 90s with regard to AIDS. And people were gaslit, in particular, gay men were gaslit by antibody tests. They would take a Western blot or an ELISA antibody test, and if their antibody counts, T cell counts, for example, were below a certain level, then they were deemed to be HIV positive. And for a long time, that meant they were put on an end of life pathway and given drugs like AZT, which ended up killing them in most cases. What have we seen throughout the COVID-19 operation? We see people present with a positive, in inverted commas, PCR test. That means they have COVID-19 or SARS-CoV-2. The two have been blurred very much. And if they exhibit symptoms, which are so broad, they could be attributed to just about anything. We've seen them put on a death pathway in hospitals in the UK with midazolam and morphine and ventilation, and in the US with remdesivir and ventilation. And I think it is very important that we go back and look at the so-called HIV/AIDS epidemic and find the parallels, the very striking parallels to what we're experiencing today in terms of weaponized so-called virology, because this has been done before, and they're not going to stop this time. Not that they ever stopped with HIV and AIDS, but this time around, they're really going for broke. It wasn't enough in the 80s and 90s to kill hundreds of thousands of gay men. And we're not even talking about Africans who've been killed by this pseudo pandemic. They had to go for it again in 2019. And here we are. Here we are dealing with the same gaslighting with regard to virology and vaccinology. And that's why I keep hammering on this point, because as long as they are able to gaslight us using those weapons of invented sickness and disease, then they're going to be able to keep weaponizing it against us. It's going to keep happening again and again. So we have to get to the bottom of what's really going on, how our bodies, how our immune systems work with regard to sickness and disease.
Yeah, entirely. And, you know, you're talking about HIV there. And of course, in England, it's just been announced that obviously because of lockup, many people have missed out on testing for HIV. So we know that there's mRNA drugs on the way, an mRNA injection for HIV. We know that. But my warning again goes back, and this is a little anecdotal tale from my son, actually. And he makes no secret of the fact that he's a rock guitarist, incredibly talented. And he has very severe osteoporosis, not normally seen in people sort of, 70, 80. He's got really bad bone quality. And he went to see a physio yesterday who was very excited to tell him about a new medicine coming down the line. It sounds really innocuous. It's called Evenity. And he was very excited about this, a bone building, you know, new drug. And the first thing I said to him was, oh, I hope it's not a monoclonal antibody. Because as we know, the generic drugs that we're used to, and you've got it going on in the USA, I've just had an email that amoxicillin, the, you know, belts and braces antibiotic, is short in the USA, as it is here in the UK. That's through Endpoints News. So we need to look at these new drugs coming down the pipeline. So I said to my son, what drug is it that they're getting so excited about? So he said, oh, it's this drug called Evenity. And like I say, I immediately, the red flags went up, because I thought, oh yeah, new drug. And when I looked, because I said, oh, I hope it doesn't end in MAB. No, it doesn't. It's called Evenity. But when I actually looked it up, it's called Romozumab. Ends in MAB, which means that it's a monoclonal antibody. Mm-hmm. And I had to explain to my son that this was going to be a novel experimental drug. And as I went to look at the clinical trials and I went to look at the research on it, I could see that this has only been tested in very elderly people, a small cohort. And it's also that side effects are cardiac arrest and cardiac disease. And I looked at my son and I said, you're 27. Sorry, actually, he's 28. He's just not long had a birthday. You're 28. Why would you want to take a drug that's only been tested on old people when the side effects could kill you? And This is what I mean. You know, we're told these, you know, these titles of these new drugs that are going to be able to help you coming down the line. But I would just warn everybody, you know, we're not learning from our mistakes. we are just repeating them. But if we look back at research and we go forward, we can see that mRNA is going to be the way forward. Monoclonal antibodies, these new powerful antivirals like cytotoxic therapy, chemotherapy that you use, you know, for advanced stage cancer. I mean, just going back to cancer quickly, when did we hear that it was one in two were going to get cancer? Because 3 years ago on our television screens, when I was watching television, when I had a television to watch, there were these adverts popping up saying one in two people die of cancer. Since when? That was never a statistic. Never. It was always heart disease would kill more people than cancer. And yet very little money's been put into heart research, whereas a lot of money, it's big business. Cancer is really big business. So the whole thing, you know, the whole pipeline coming down the line is poison, in my opinion. And it's chemicals, and these are highly toxic chemicals. And everybody needs to be aware that, you know, if they're going to the doctor and the doctor's offering them a new drug or a one that they haven't heard of, please research it first. You know, look at what you're taking, look at what you're putting in your body, because nobody's going to give you that information. It's going to be up to you, us as individuals, to find out that information and to inform ourselves if we're happy to and feel safe to take it. And that really, I think, is the message going forward, Jesse. Although it's not one that I would want to put out, because, you know, we've had so many good, in inverted commas, drugs. You know, my son had meningococcal, one of my sons had meningococcal septicemia, and thank goodness there were antibiotics. And, you know, he's alive to tell the tale. But we need to be watching what's coming down the pipeline. And as you've so rightly highlighted many times, what's coming down the Moderna pipeline is absolutely terrifying.
Yes, Pfizer's as well. I had a look at Pfizer's last week before I talked to Hedley Reese, and it's essentially the same as Moderna's pipeline. There are variations, and I think Moderna has a bit more in the works, but you're essentially looking at the same operation with regard to mRNA injections. And since you brought up monoclonals, I touched on this last week before we ran out of time. Reported on November 18th by farmvestnik.ru, which is a Russian language pharmaceutical media outlet, the Ministry of Health has registered another drug for the prevention and treatment of COVID-19. The Ministry of Health has registered Evusheld, which is AstraZeneca's monoclonal antibody drug. It includes two monoclonal antibodies, Thixagevimab and Silgavimab. Sorry for the mispronunciations, but they make these names
deliberately so you can't pronounce them.
Right.
So you can't say them.
So the FDA approved Evusheld in December of 2021, and officially it's been taken up by the Russian Ministry of Health, and it's supposed to be for emergency treatment of, for the prevention and emergency treatment of COVID-19, whatever that means. And when you look at the information for healthcare providers, the fact sheet for healthcare providers on the FDA's own website, and I always recommend going to the fact sheet for healthcare providers rather than the one for patients and caregivers, because the one for healthcare providers is almost always different, and it's almost always different in that it contains more detailed information. And I don't think that's an accident. But when you go to look at this sheet for healthcare providers, on page 28 of 29, there's a section titled Cardiovascular Events. And it reads, inform individuals that a higher proportion of subjects who received Evusheld I think it's pronounced EvuShield, but it's spelled in all caps EvuShield. So shelled, one could be forgiven for reading it as that or misreading it as that. A higher proportion of subjects who received EvuShield versus placebo reported cardiovascular serious events, myocardial infarctions, and heart failure. Advise individuals to seek immediate medical attention if they experience any signs or symptoms suggestive of a cardiovascular event. So what they're telling you here is that this 2-in-1 monoclonal antibody for the prevention and treatment of COVID-19. And when you start to look at what that means, it's very, very blurry and very equivocating, the language in this fact sheet. But what they're essentially telling you here is that this increases your risk of having a serious cardiac event, including a heart attack or heart failure. But it's being,
and this is what I'm seeing though, Jesse, with these monoclonals, mm-hmm. whichever ones they are, whether it's EvuShield or whichever one, the serious adverse reactions, cardiac, many of them, they're all the same. They're all just as dangerous. And this is my point. But interestingly, you know, in the UK, EvuShield, which is made by AstraZeneca, which we must remember AstraZeneca is hand in hand with King Charles. But EvuShield has actually, although it's been approved by the MHRA here, it's not available on the NHS. So because of the cost, we had Molnupiravir here and that got stopped. That was £500 for a course. EvuShield is £600 for an injection. And because it's only meant to, in inverted commas, protect patients for up to 6 months, so this is the vulnerable patients, these are the really frightened ones that are, you know, maybe they're transplant recipients, maybe somebody's really, really frightened them and said, look, you know, this injection is going to protect you from COVID. Because it's only got a 6 month duration, the MHRA have said it's not, well, they've approved it, but it's not been approved for NHS use. So people have to buy it. But it's an antibody. It's meant to be an antibody boosting treatment. And if you look at the AstraZeneca global rollout of their vector viral, their COVID-19 vaccine, that was, I think it was £3. That's probably the same in dollars, $3 a shot. And this EvuShield is £600 per injection. So these are very, very toxic medicines. And this is what I mean. People think they've dodged a bullet, those that haven't taken the COVID-19 vaccine, those that think that they've dodged that bullet, there's plenty more coming down the line. And that's what we need to be ready for and have our suits of armor on, because we really do need to go back to natural medicine and herbal medicine. Because allopathic medicine from pharmaceutical companies, in my opinion, is not safe. And it's getting more dangerous as the months are going on.
I agree. I absolutely agree. And before we throw it to a quick break, I just want to point out two things with regard to these monoclonals. One is that in January 2021, Bill Gates made a video where he waxed on about the need for monoclonals in preventing and treating COVID-19. So this is something that's been in his toolkit, if you will, for quite some time. And I think it goes without saying, we need to be very wary when Bill Gates recommends any sort of medical intervention, if you can even dignify this with the word medical. I also want to point out that in this fact sheet for EvuShield or EvuShield, cardiovascular events section, it's a section or subsection 5.5 on page 9 of 29. So the two monoclonals in the one EvuShield, the brand name, I suppose, for one is Provent, P-R-O-V-E-N-T, And the other is Storm Chaser, which is ominous to say the least. But under cardiovascular events, it says in Provent, there was a higher rate of cardiovascular serious adverse events, SAEs, including myocardial infarction, one fatal SAE, and cardiac failure in subjects who received Evusheld compared to placebo. All subjects who experienced cardiac SAEs had cardiac risk factors and or a prior history of cardiovascular disease, and there was no clear temporal pattern. A causal relationship between Evusheld and these events has not been established. There was no signal for cardiac toxicity or thrombotic events identified in the non-clinical studies. Talk about gaslighting. There, first of all, yes, there was a temporal pattern. They experienced, the subjects experienced these cardiac events after receiving Provent. And just because they have heart issues or cardiovascular issues, well, were those exacerbated by Provent? Or to what extent did they have cardiovascular issues? Were they minor or subclinical and intensified by Provent? We don't know because no causal relationship has been established, which leads me to believe that no study has been done or is being done to establish this. But as far as there being no signal for cardiac toxicity or thrombotic events identified in the non-clinical studies, that's another bit of gaslighting right there. And they don't define cardiac risk factors or a prior history of cardiovascular disease. It's so broad that they can get away with saying this, but I think anybody in their right mind should read this and think this causes serious, even fatal heart damage.
Yeah, and then look too at how long it's taken to roll out. Don't forget, we've got in the UK, and I'm sure you've got it similar in the US, we've got this 100-day mission. So, you know, as soon as something is seen to be not to have a therapeutic, all of a sudden we've got 100 days to rush these novel, new, experimental medicines out. So it's not just the toxicity and the dangers of these medicines, well, they're not medicines, the chemicals that these pharmaceutical companies are throwing out, but it's everything that goes with it. It's the time that it's taken. It's the amount of people that have been in the, in inverted commas, clinical study. I mean, many of these studies have been quick, they've been low cohorts, and they've not included people from every age group or from, you know, like we would normally do a clinical trial. So the whole thing is completely corrupt and twisted.
Mm-hmm. And the last thing I want to point out, so this has been, as I said, officially taken up in Russia, and Russia's Sputnik V injection is an AstraZeneca product. It was developed in close concert with Oxford and AstraZeneca. So it's not surprising that the Ministry of Health is taking up another AstraZeneca product. And in this article, it says, Evusheld is intended for the prevention of coronavirus infection and is used in people with a weakened immune system or after severe adverse reactions to the COVID-19 vaccine, the instructions for medical use say.
So they're admitting then that they need a treatment for somebody that's had serious adverse reactions. That's a complete admission, isn't it?
Yes, yes. And I don't know if
that's really interesting, Jesse. That's absolutely mind blowing, because what they're saying is that vaccine injury is now regarded as a condition that they need to medicate. So that's absolutely, you know, I mean, I'm completely gobsmacked by that. I think that's a brilliant piece of detective work, though, on your part.
I need to correlate that with the fact sheet that I just read from and see if that information is indeed in there. But this article is saying that that is the case, that that's in that literature I just read from. And the piece goes on to describe what these monoclonals do, how they should be injected, and essentially that they're successful and they're going to become a regular part of the prevention and treatment regimen, so-called, in Russia. And that's terrible, because the Sputnik V injection has undoubtedly harmed and killed a lot of people, not just in Russia, but also other countries that have adopted it, like Argentina. And it's still being pushed, just like this medical democide operation is being pushed, being perpetrated here in the West, as it were. And we need to keep pointing this out and realize that when it comes to this overarching COVID-19 operation, which I've argued many times and will continue to argue is serving an even larger agenda, almost the entire world is on board with it. Russia, the US, China, the UK. And we need to accept and understand that and determine what the implications and consequences are of that moving forward with regard to the kind of world that's being proposed to us by a lot of alternative media voices, and whether that proposition stacks up with reality given this information. That said, let's throw it to a quick break, but when we come back, there's plenty of more to get into. So everybody hang tight, and I will return momentarily with Debbie Evans here on TNT Radio after this.
You should hear what Timothy Shea is talking about.
Monkeypox, 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 monkeypox. It's not racist to call the disease known as monkeypox, monkeypox. It's not insulting to monkeys. We could call it butt sex pox, if you'd rather, because that's how it's transmitted these days. It's not necessarily how it's transmitted. It's a contact transmission. Anybody could get it, just like smallpox. But monkeypox is no more racist than smallpox is discriminatory against little people, right? Or chickenpox is offensive to chickens. I had chickenpox. Does that mean you're calling me chicken? I'm not a chicken. I'm not chicken. I'm brave. Don't call it chickenpox just because I got it. Grow up, people. Monkeypox. There.
The Timothy Shea Show on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Roxanne Watson is on a mission.
Hello, how are you doing today?
She wants more people to register as organ, eye, and tissue donors.
Are you an organ donor?
Yes, I am.
Yay!
My goal is to sign up the most people in the United States.
What drives her? Roxanne's own life was saved through the gift of a heart transplant, made possible by an organ donor.
I decided that day that I was going to devote myself to the cause of organ donation and signing people up and honoring my donor by doing that.
Now she's back to health, and she's a powerful force helping to save lives every day through her work. Imagine what you can make possible by leaving behind the gift of life.
8 people can be helped with the major organs, and up to 50 people can be helped with a little bit of everything. And when you think about it that way, that you could help that many people, it's amazing, it really is.
Learn more and sign up as an organ, eye, and tissue donor. Go to organdonor.gov. A message from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, Health Resources and Services Administration.
Pregnant women never take new medications.
They never take experimental medications.
And we've never had pregnant women take novel, unproven genetic injections. Something has gone drastically wrong. Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Welcome back to Perspective here on TNT Radio, where we are live 24/7. I'm Jesse Zerwell, and I'm speaking with Debbie Evans, nursing correspondent for UK Column News. Debbie, just one more point I'd like to bring up about Russia, and I want to thank my friend and frequent guest on the show, journalist Riley Wagaman, for pointing this out. This was published on the Russian language version of RT on November 29th, Dr. Kotishkova advised to get vaccinated against COVID-19 to avoid post-COVID diabetes. Endocrinologist, head of the Department of Education and Treatment of Diabetes at the Endocrinological I'm having trouble with my pronunciations today. Dispensary.
Endocrinological. You're nearly there. We say endocrinologist for endocrinology. And it's right. The study of like glands, like your pituitary gland and your thyroid. And so endocrinology.
Yes, the endocrinological, that's how it's written here.
Yeah.
That's the one that's giving me trouble.
and you know, it brings us onto a very good point very, very quickly before you carry on, in that we've got nurses coming over here that can't speak English. Now, you know, even when you've got words written in English, like endocrinologist, even people that are fluent English speakers, native English speakers, they struggle to get their tongues around all of this, which is why they bring out all of these names so that you deliberately can't say them. It's crazy. But yes, endocrinology.
Yes. So there's an endocrinological dispensary of the DZM, which is in Russia. The department, the head of the department, Olga Kotishkova, noted that COVID-19 infections can trigger the development of diabetes, which is new to me. When you read this piece, which is quite short, it reads, and this is a quote from her, "We have the only concept of diabetes prevention, the use of vaccinations so that patients get sick less, so that they don't get sick with the flu, so that there is no COVID. After COVID, we see an increase in the number of patients with diabetes mellitus. Therefore, it is clear that vaccinations must be given," Kotishkova said on the air of the radio station Moscow Says. Earlier, academician of the Russian Academy of Sciences, Gennady Onishenko, in an interview with the FAN, advised to show responsibility in the issue of vaccination against COVID-19 and influenza. That's the entire piece, but I found that striking in just how pseudoscientific and I would say homicidal it is. It makes no sense whatsoever, and it's clearly intended to force more injections into people.
Yeah, it's gaslighting. I mean, somebody said to me today, I'm not trying to make fun at all, but somebody actually said to me this morning, "I have a spot on my nose. It must be because of COVID." They were saying it in a joking fashion, but it's everything now is going to be blamed on COVID-19. I saw an article in a newspaper with a young girl who had broken her leg, and her leg apparently had been weakened due to having COVID. So everything's going to be blamed on COVID. My argument and your argument, and I guess everybody listening is that until we have a full and thorough investigation on the vaccine, in inverted commas, we will never know what the causal effects of the vaccine have been on many of you who are vaccine injured. So whilst they're very keen to blame it on COVID, we need to be remembering all of the time that we have had no investigation, no debate, no answering of any questions, no discussion over the effects of the vaccine, which I call a gene platform. And that is where it gets dangerous, because it's very easy to blame COVID, in inverted commas, not that it's ever been isolated, but it's very easy to blame animals. So, you know, zoonotic, or well, it came from a pangolin or it came from a bat. It's very easy to pacify people if you blame it on something else and you detract from what's the real cause. And I believe that many of you are suffering genuine, serious adverse reactions from taking the COVID-19 injection, being told that it was safe when it wasn't. And I genuinely think that blaming COVID, we could go on blaming COVID forever. But there has to be a time when you start to say, you know what, the spot on my face is not caused by COVID. And not everything is caused by COVID, but it's easy to blame it.
Right. Yes. So much to say about that. COVID is the gift that keeps giving for those who've weaponized it against us. Since we were talking about, we've talked about antimicrobial resistance, and on November 22nd, the World Economic Forum, everybody's favorite cabal, published a piece in their global health section. It's a bigger killer than HIV, AIDS, and malaria. Here's what we can do to beat antimicrobial resistance. So they are pushing this idea now that antimicrobial resistance is not just a big problem, but a problem that's getting bigger. I don't know if you knew, but the week of November 18th was World Antimicrobial Awareness Week. And this piece goes on to talk about antimicrobial resistance and what we can do to combat it. And it says antimicrobial resistance is becoming a silent pandemic, the looming health catastrophe that could be more deadly than COVID-19. It lists some statistics: 1.27 million people killed by AMR infections annually. 1 in 5 AMR-associated deaths occur in children under age 5. So here again, we have more targeting of children. 10 million estimated annual AMR deaths in 2050. So they're projecting into the future. I'd love to see the modeling that went into that. And it goes on to say antimicrobial resistance could also cost the global economy as much as $100 trillion between now and, again, 2050, according to the International Federation of Pharmaceutical Manufacturers and Associations. And this piece says resistance is increasing partly because antimicrobials have been overused since their discovery, and also due to poor sanitation and hygiene. And there's much more in this. And I suppose for the study of gaslighting and disinformation, willful disinformation, it's worth reading. But this is obviously intended to terrify people about the deadliest of the deadly pandemics, one that we haven't kept our eye on because of everything else. And this is just, again, this is the fear based on pathogenicity that just keeps going and going and going and giving and giving and giving for those people and entities who've been weaponizing this against us in an accelerated way for over the last 3 years, but really for most of the 20th century and into the 21st century.
Yeah, and you know, antimicrobial resistance is something I know a little bit about. And what I'll quickly say about that is refers people to SPARS pandemic 2025 to 2028, when you can see that there's a chapter about antimicrobial resistance. And of course, antimicrobial resistance is where we're talking about the antibiotics that we all have come to know, like penicillin and amoxicillin and ampicillin and all of those, fluoxacillin. They apparently no longer work because what they're looking for is disease X. So in the UK, it all kicked off, funnily enough. We had a health minister, the shortest ever health minister, in time, Therese Coffey, just recently. But before she was health minister this time around, back in, I think it was, about 5 or 6 years ago, she came out and said that she'd given antibiotics to a friend. And she was called out for it and said it was monumental stupidity. And from there on in, the Prime Minister at the time, David Cameron, he actually launched an inquiry into antimicrobial resistance. We've now in the UK got an antimicrobial envoy, Dame Sally Davis, who used to be, she was our chief medical officer before Chris Whitty, who you've probably heard of. So Sally Davis mm-hmm. came out on the 17th of October and said this year and said antimicrobial resistance could kill us before the climate crisis does. And I mean, the gaslighting in it is absolutely phenomenal. I mean, they say that this is the amount of gaslighting there is. But by 2050, they reckon that 10 million people will have died because of antimicrobial resistance, and it will cost $100 trillion in economic output. So 10 million people a year are going to be affected by bacteria, viruses and fungi, and this is going to be bigger than climate change. So you can see where the next gaslighting project is going to go, and I think AMR is something we need to keep very, very, very close eye on, because these antivirals and monoclonal antibodies, which we've been talking about, they're what are replacing our good old belts and braces, penicillin and ampicillin and amoxicillin, that now we can't get. So it's it's heads up for disease X and heads up. Have a look at SPARS pandemic 2025 to 2028, because it's all in the futuristic plan. AMR is a big deal. And definitely we need to keep our eyes on the ball.
Yes. And what I would say in general is that we're being poisoned by so-called vaccines. That's how I refer to myself with regard to being injured by the COVID-19 injection. I was poisoned by it. And these monoclonals are poisons. And the more poisons we take, the more our natural system of dealing with things that our body does not want to be in our body are going to break down, the more our immune system is going to break down, and the more they're going to push things like antimicrobial resistance. It's interesting because with regard to the $100 trillion number, because as I read, that's the number the World Economic Forum cites in this piece. It goes on to say it gets worse, because there's a section about what to do with regard to this problem. And it proposes we could target the genes bacteria require to cause disease, making them harmless without interfering with bacterial growth. Then it goes on to talk about tackling antibiotic resistance with AI and quantum computing, which it's breathtaking that we're talking about generative here in this paper, generative AI models to produce hypotheses about the final molecule needed for a new specific drug, which would target antimicrobial resistance. Of course, it talks about drug resistance and superbugs, how to stop the spread. There's a member of the Dutch government who's quoted as saying, by working collaboratively across multiple sectors, so here we have the public-private partnership idea, we can stop the next big global health threat, antimicrobial resistance, in its tracks. It also proposes how to fight antibiotic resistant superbugs with a simple subscription payment model. And lo and behold, Jeremy Farrar, director of the Wellcome Trust, and Mads Krogsgaard Thompson, CEO of Novo Nordisk Foundation, discuss how changing the way we pay for antibiotics can help tackle superbugs. And I'll send this piece to you, because there's a lot of information in it. And of course, Jeremy Farrar, as you and I well know, has been a very, very pernicious player in not just the COVID-19 operation, but before that as well. The Wellcome Trust has a very sordid history. And
yes,
yeah, this is what's being pushed by the World Economic Forum. And I think you can see from its putting out of the $100 trillion expense and that figure being taken up by the woman you just mentioned, the antimicrobial resistance envoy. Yes.
Yeah. And you know, Sally Davis, she met David Cameron in a cafe at the Wellcome Trust. That's where. Mm. And she sat in the cafe and she persuaded David Cameron, gaslit him, that AMR was going to be the next best thing or the next biggest thing. And the report, if anybody wants to go and look at it, and I'll send it to you, Jesse, is called the O'Neill Report, the government response to the review on antimicrobial resistance, September 2016. So she gaslit David Cameron in a Wellcome cafe. How ironic is that?
How appropriate. Well, yeah. Unfortunately, we are out of time once again, but I will be sure to share this information with you, Debbie, and there will be plenty, I'm sure, to talk about next week, and I look forward to doing so. Thank you again.
As always, Jesse, thank you so much for inviting me. It's always a pleasure.